Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Criminal Defendants and Deficient Legal Advice Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On October 31st, 2011, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments for the cases Lafler v. Cooper and Missouri v. Fry. The question in both cases revolves around what happens when a criminal defendant receives deficient legal advice. In Lafler v. Cooper, the court will consider whether a criminal defendant who rejects a favorable plea offer based on his lawyer's advice but who later is convicted and receives a harsher sentence, can seek to overturn that sentence on the grounds that his attorney was unconstitutionally deficient. Missouri v. Fry will consider whether a criminal defendant who failed to communicate a plea offer from the prosecution can make a claim of ineffective assistance of counsel against the lawyer, and what the court should do for a defendant in this situation who was later convicted and sentenced. To discuss the cases, we have Kent Scheidegger, who is the legal director of the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Scheidegger.
The Sixth Amendment gives the defendant in a criminal case the right to assistance of counsel. This has been interpreted to include a right to effective assistance of counsel at every critical stage of the case, including plea bargaining. For this reason, criminal sentences have been overturned when a defendant pleads guilty based on incompetent advice from his attorney. But what happens when a defendant does not accept an offered plea bargain because of ineffective assistance by his attorney, and he is subsequently convicted in a concededly fair proceeding, either a fair trial or a fully informed guilty plea with less favorable terms? That was the question before the United States Supreme Court on October 31st in two cases, Lafler v. Cooper and Missouri v. Fry. In the landmark case of Strickland v. Washington, the Supreme Court established two requirements for overturning a judgment for ineffective assistance. The first requirement is deficient performance of the attorney, which is not disputed in these cases. The second requirement is commonly referred to as the prejudice prong. Strickland gave us two definitions for prejudice. One is that the attorney's errors deprived the defendant of a fair trial, a trial whose result is reliable. Later in the opinion, Strickland says the test is a reasonable probability that, but for counsel's unprofessional errors, the result of the proceeding would have been different. In the typical ineffective assistance case, the reasonable probability test is the measure by which we decide if the reliability is so impaired as to warrant overturning the judgment. There are exceptions, however. When a conflict of interest adversely affects counsel's representation, no further showing of prejudice is required. Conversely, when an argument of law that might have been accepted at the time is now known to be meritless, there is no prejudice, even if the result probably would have been different. The difference between probability of a different result and reliability of the result actually obtained lies at the heart of these cases. In the first case, Cooper shot Callie Mundy as she was running away from him, causing life-threatening injuries. He was offered a plea bargain with a maximum sentence of 7 years, but turned it down on his lawyer's advice. That advice is conceded to be bad. He was convicted at trial of assault with intent to murder and sentenced to 15 to 30 years. There is no claim at this point of any error in the trial. In the second case, Galen Fry was caught driving after his license was revoked for the fourth time, which is a felony. The prosecutor offered a plea bargain for a misdemeanor charge, but defense counsel never told Fry about it. Fry later pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 3 years in prison. There is no argument at this point that the guilty plea was not otherwise informed and voluntary. Early in the prosecution's argument in Cooper, there was some discussion as to whether the state was arguing that there was no Sixth Amendment violation or that the remedy of reversal did not extend to this situation. The state solicitor general argued that both prongs of Strickland must be met to find a violation, but the justices seemed to believe that the performance prong is the violation and the prejudice prong goes to the remedy. Justice Kagan was the most vigorous for the defendant's point of view. She asserted that Cooper being in prison for much longer than he otherwise would have been was prejudice under Strickland, applying the difference in outcome test. Justice Scalia was strongest for the prosecution view, asking, how could it be unfair to give him the sentence he deserved? This implies the reliable result test. Justice Kennedy also came back to the basic fairness of the outcome in the end, asking defense counsel incredulously, "You are saying it was unfair to have a fair trial?" There was also much discussion about what remedy could be provided if a violation were found. Justice Alito said, "The remedy of giving a new trial when the person already had a fair trial makes zero sense." Counsel for Cooper agreed. She wanted reinstatement of the original deal. Yet in the Frey argument, Justice Ginsburg noted that the prosecutor could have withdrawn the offer at any time. The unfairness to the prosecution of withdrawing that option when the prosecutor did nothing wrong is a problem. Counsel for Frey conceded that there is no perfect remedy in this situation, but he contended that reinstating the original bargain was as close to perfect as possible. But the original bargain really can't be reinstated. The prosecution offered the original bargain in return for a quick end to the case, and that consideration is no longer possible. Leaving the parties where they would have been if no offer had been made may be as close to perfect as possible, and that is right where they are.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.